Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Evening, everyone. Evening. Thanks for coming out this evening. Hopefully we're in for an interesting session. Going to be talking all about the mind control manipulations and the satanic agenda of the mainstream music industry. So not your average subject matter, but I'm sure regular attendees of this group would expect nothing less. The reason Andy has not seen my talk before is because this is actually the first public presentation that I've done on this subject. I'm new to this whole arena of public speaking. I did do an earlier version of this in Latvia last year, but this is the first of its kind that I've done. So anything could happen. I don't have any proper slides, as you probably figured, but I've got a whole bunch of images on the laptop here, which I'm going to try and muddle through, and hopefully it'll work. Something to mention is that there's going to be a little bit of colourful, explicit language here and there, not because I'm trying to shock or be controversial, but because with the kind of subject matter we're dealing with, you can't do it proper justice and put it all into context unless you go there. So at one or two stages, it will get a bit colourful, but that's down to the music makers and not me. Okay, so I've been a music fan all my life, from a very early age. I bought my first record when I was 5, which was nothing too embarrassing. It was Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, first time round, in 1975. And I remember going down to my local Woolworths, I think it cost about 35p back in the day, and buying a 7-inch vinyl record. And so for the rest of my childhood and my teenage years, I was into basically pop music, whatever was in the charts. And in my teenage years, I kind of refined my tastes a bit, and I got into basically black music. We're talking hip-hop, R&B, soul, reggae, that sort of thing. And to cut a long story short, I decided that I wanted to become a DJ. And I got there in 1990, got established, so I've been doing it for 23 years now. In all that time, I've been fortunate enough to DJ in over 40 countries around the world, length and breadth of the UK. I've done various radio shows and I've written for various magazines, so had a good innings. So if my career flops tomorrow, no real complaints. So I'm going to be talking mainly about stuff that's been happening over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. But before that, I just want to tell you a story and take you back to the early days. We're going back to 1990, which was the first year that I got involved in the business. And it's a story that has some relevance to some of the stuff that comes later, although I didn't realise it at the time. So I first started out working for a radio station in Oxford called Fox FM. It's called Heart FM now, a whole load of consolidation. But back in the day, it was an independent station called Fox FM. And I was basically the tea boy and the dog's body. And I used to do things like help out in the newsroom and play out pre-recorded shows. And I didn't have much of a life back then. I spent my life in the radio station, basically, all weekends and staying overnight in the studio, that sort of thing. And I remember hearing from a TV program, I think it was The Tube on Channel 4, about a Madonna record, which had just come out at the time, Justify My Love. And they were talking about the concept of backmasking, or subliminal messages placed backwards in a record. You hear that the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were involved in this. Black Sabbath, little surprise there, considering it's Ozzy Osbourne, and Led Zeppelin and others apparently employed this technique, where if you play the record backwards, you hear a message that you don't recognise when it's played forwards. And so they were saying that in this Madonna record, if you play it backwards, you hear the phrase, "Hear us, love us, Satan." So I first heard that and I was like, okay, I want to know more about this, sparked my curiosity. And this was back in the days before radio stations used computers, and everything was done on reels of tape, and I used to operate reels of tape. So I thought, I've got to see if this works. So I recorded this Madonna record onto a reel of tape, swapped the reels around on the machine so that it played backwards, and there's a point in the song where it does definitely sound like she's saying, "Hear us, love us, Satan." And when I first heard this, it was in a dark studio, about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was absolutely crapping myself. And there was only one other person in the building, which was the on-air presenter. So I went next door and I said to the guy, "You've got to come and hear this, mate. Come and listen to what I've just found on this." And so I took him in the room, pressed play on the tape machine, and there was nothing there. it had gone. I went all through the reel of tape, rewound it, fast-forwarded it, searched the whole reel of tape. There's nothing there. It had disappeared. So I don't have any explanation for what actually happened there, but it did freak me out. And when we get into some of the other stuff here, it kind of perhaps places it into some context. So going back to the 90s, I got started in my career and I had a great time in the 90s. I didn't know any of the stuff that I know now. I was blissfully ignorant and oblivious to it all. Just stopping in the middle of the 90s though, there were a couple of very strange things which happened in the world of hip-hop music. Particularly in, well, first of all, 1997, which was quite an eventful year, quite a dark year, really. You had the murder of Diana, you had this character coming into power, and a couple of other things as well. It's a vile, disgusting abomination of humanity, and Jimmy Savile. Who says conspiracy nuts? Kind of a sense of humour. So, yeah, Blair came to power. And something I've noticed about him is every year that he's voted or manipulated into power or re-elected, something goes on in the world. 1997, Diana was murdered. 2001, he got back in, 9/11. 2005, he got back in again, 7/7. Just a coincidence, I'm sure, nothing to worry about. But what we had in hip-hop in 1996, first of all, was the murder of Tupac Shakur, rapper. And he was shot in a drive-by shooting, and he died in a hail of bullets in a car. Well, he died 6 days later in hospital, actually, but in September 1996. And 6 months later, in March 1997, in almost exactly the same circumstances, you had the notorious B.I.G., otherwise known as Biggie Smalls, another very high-profile rapper, again shot to death in a drive-by shooting. And the strange thing about this, as you may have noticed, is just before each of these murders, you had records released by these artists with some very strange imagery, which seemed in some way to foreshadow what was going to happen. So Tupac brought out this album under the alias Machiavelli, the Don Caluminati. There's some interesting wording there, which depicts him being crucified, Christ-like. And then when you go to the Notorious B.I.G. album, he's in a funeral suit next to a hearse. And all of Biggie's albums involve the concept of death, all the album titles. You had Born Again, Life After Death, oh, Ready to Die was the first one, sorry. Ready to Die, followed by Life After Death, and then a posthumous album called Born Again. So it's all involved in death. Didn't think too much of it at the time. It wasn't until later that it all kind of came into context. And most of what I'm going to be talking about has happened from sort of 2008 onwards. Excuse me a sec. So a lot of things started to change for me in 2008. I reached the point where I'd come to realise that the world and life is nothing like the way it's depicted by the mainstream media, governments, and educational establishments. This was as a result of a lot of reading, not least David Icke's books, but many other authors as well. And that process continued for me until 2010, which is a year where I underwent what I would describe as a conscious awakening. And that was the point where all the various pieces kind of fitted together for me, and they all clicked, and I was able to understand great truths about the nature of life, the nature of reality, what's really going on in the world, and who's running things in the world. And I'm sure most people in this room would not be surprised to hear that the people running the show when it comes to daily human affairs are not the people that we're told they are. So it's not governments. There are actually individuals working within secret societies in the shadows that are manipulating pretty much every aspect of human affairs and have been for a very long time, hundreds, if not thousands of years. And what they've done over that period of time is they've infiltrated and hijacked and controlled any profession, any aspect of daily human life that they feel could be turned to their advantage in terms of controlling people's perceptions of themselves, of reality, of what life is all about, and suppressing humanity, and just having absolute control over everything that goes on. And so obviously they've infiltrated governments. It's happened with the banking system, the whole financial world, with corporations, food and drink companies, educational establishments, schools, colleges, the scientific establishment. And of course, if you've done all that, and if you're a socio-psychopath hell-bent on controlling and suppressing humanity, you're not going to leave out the entertainment industry, particularly Hollywood movies and the music industry. It's a very essential method of controlling people's minds and getting your agenda out there and getting people to think the way you want to think and getting people's attention where you want it to go. And so I came to understand that that's what's been happening in the music business. And the two incidences we saw there of the album sleeves were at the beginning of that. Here are some lyrics from what purports to be a hip-hop record. When I first started out in the music business, hip-hop was meaningful music that came from the streets. It was artists articulating aspects of their lives, things that connected with the audience, things that made sense, statements that needed to be made. There were also party records, you know, that there were records to get down to in the club, and the lyrics were fairly inane, but there were nothing like this. This is the sort of thing we get now. This is from a record by Big Sean featuring Nicki Minaj. There'll be more on Nicki Minaj later. And it's called Us. And this is the sort of thing that kids are listening to in hip-hop music now. Us, 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 us. Go Stupid, Go Stupid, Go Stupid, which is the hook from this track and also a track by Lil Wayne. Presumably an instruction to the listeners. Wobble dee wobble dee wobble wobble wobble. Okay, so it's not what it used to be. And by about 2008, I'd come to understand that there was all kinds of symbolism and imagery that was going into the music business. It was going into music videos, it was going into record sleeves, and there were some very clear patterns that were starting to emerge. I got a lot of this information, not least from a website called Vigilant Citizen, which is a great website, definitely recommend it, vigilantcitizen.com. It's a researcher in Canada that goes into all the symbolism and explains what it means, what the underlying message is. And what you have got over the years is a whole bunch of artists covering one eye. This is Lisa Left Eye Lopez of the group TLC, who died in 2002 in a car accident. May or may not have been, as we were told. Here's Justin Timberlake. This was another kind of artistic, fashionable way of photographing artists, which came in a few years ago, to chop the face in half so you just see the one eye. But again, it's one eye symbolism. More on Justin Timberlake later as well. Here we've got Rihanna and Lady Gaga doing it. There are various different ways of covering the eye. You know, sometimes it's circling the eye, sometimes it's a hand over it, sometimes it's the eye being highlighted here, but they're all at it. And you come to realize that all these artists are being instructed to do this and are absolutely controlled by the corporations that their music is released through. And people say, well, you know, it's just a way of looking cool. It's just a fashionable thing to do. So why is everyone doing it? Everyone. People say, oh, you know, Rihanna's not involved. Beyonce's not involved. Sadly, if you want to become an A-list artist in this age, you have to, literally in some cases, sell your soul to the Illuminati corporations that have taken over the whole business and tell you what to do. It is not possible now to be a successful artist, at least in the US industry, without wholesale going down that route. And people say, you know, not such and such, it can't be my favorite artist, not Justin Bieber. Yeah, Justin Bieber as well. And more on Justin Bieber later as well, actually, he was in the news just last week. And so I came to understand that the whole eye symbolism is a reference or a depiction of the all-seeing eye, which I'm sure we're all familiar with from the dollar bill and the Illuminati pyramid there. It's a representation of that. And it seems that there's always more than one reason why the control system does the things that they do. And in this case, it would certainly appear to be a case of, there's an element of letting you know who's in control, letting you know who's running the show. So when you see these artists depicting this kind of imagery, they're kind of letting you know that they're controlling things. But there also seems to be an aspect of, because symbols carry energy or are a representation of energy, when people are absorbing this imagery subconsciously in most cases, because most people don't realise what's going on, they're giving their energy to it and they're helping to empower the continuation of this agenda, and people don't realise it's going on. And the whole thing just reminded me of the movie Rosemary's Baby, if anyone's seen that. Roman Polanski movie from 1968. And in it, well, it purports to be fiction, but I would argue that it's more factual than fiction, what's going on in that movie. You've got the Mia Farrow character, who again is covering one eye, interestingly. And she comes to realise that everyone around her is involved in a satanic ring. The neighbours, her friends, the doctor, and her husband is a struggling bit part actor, and he wants to make it big in Broadway and in Hollywood. He wants to become a famous actor. And he falls in with this bunch of Satanists, and they basically make him an offer, and they say that they will make him famous and they will get him to where he wants to be as an actor, but there's a price to pay. And the price to pay is that he has to sell his soul and that he has to give up his wife to be impregnated by this demonic entity, basically. And so it just makes me wonder how much Roman Polanski, the director, really understood about what goes on in Hollywood and the entertainment business generally. Because there's a lot of truth in that movie, I would suggest. And there's a lot of underlying elements which are going on in today's music business. Okay, so the next thing that I came to discover was the very sinister and very ugly world of trauma-based mind control, specifically MKUltra and Monarch programming. And I looked into this a bit, and it turns out that it's a technique, if you want to call it that, that was developed in Nazi Germany by German scientists. At the end of the Second World War, a lot of them were brought over to the United States by an early version of the CIA, covertly, and they were put to work on various projects to continue what they were researching in Nazi Germany. And one of these was what came to be known as MKUltra mind control. Trauma-based, the subjects are, they undergo horrific processes involving witnessing all kinds of things, maybe somebody being killed in front of them. Drugs are involved, electroshock treatment is involved. The whole thing is so horrific for the subject that it causes the mind to shatter into different compartments and different personalities, each compartment having its own personality, and they're said to dissociate from reality. And what you get is a number of different personalities within that one individual, but each personality is not aware of the others. That's the effect that the trauma has on the mind, they discovered. And so they've been rolling this program out in various aspects of life and society, and it's clear that it's happening in the music business. And it would appear that a lot of your favourite artists are involved in this. The reason Mariah Carey is here is because she's holding a butterfly, a Monarch butterfly, and Monarch programming is a division of the whole MKUltra agenda. Apparently, the butterfly is supposed to symbolise the metamorphosis from cocoon to butterfly, which kind of represents what's going on in the mind. And you'll be interested to see the amount of artists that appear on record sleeves in conjunction with Monarch butterflies. We'll go through a few more of those in a short while. This is Robert Johnson, a depiction of Robert Johnson, the blues singer. And it was said of him that he sold his soul to the devil for fame and fortune. And it's taken to be a legend or a myth, but I would suggest there's a lot of truth to that idea when it comes to a lot of artists. We've got here, I don't know what he's called this week, he's been called Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Diddy Dirty Money, Sean Combs, to give him his birth name. He was the proprietor of Bad Boy Records, which was Notorious B.I.G.'s record label. And I mean, it's like the suspicion of what happened to Tupac and Notorious B.I.G. is similar to the JFK story. There's so many different theories of who was involved and what it was all about. Some suspect that there were factions of the American government that had them both taken out. A lot of people suspect that it was individuals much closer to home. In the case of Tupac, the manager of Death Row Records, his record label Suge Knight, a lot of people claim that he was involved in some way in what happened to Tupac. A lot of people claim the same thing about Puffy when it comes to the Notorious B.I.G. Professor Griff, who was a former member of the group Public Enemy, Minister of Information for Public Enemy, he got kicked out of the group many years ago, but he's been taken back since because he was very outspoken. But he's talked a lot about the idea of artists selling their souls to the music industry, the idea of ritual sacrifices within the music industry, and particularly hip-hop. And he said that he has evidence from insiders that Puffy, and no doubt many others, in order to get the fame and fortune that they did in the music industry, I mean, this guy is a multi-millionaire. He's one of the richest guys in music. Had to undergo initiation ceremonies into the industry that were very similar to what happens in these secret society fraternities, such as Skull and Bones, which George W. Bush and many others had to go through. Griff claims that they're homosexual in nature, and they involve lying naked in a coffin, among other activities. And so apparently this guy, and possibly many others, were involved in that in exchange for their fame and fortune, it's claimed. And just to say, it's pretty clear that the Illuminati, if you want to call them that, the control system, whatever name you want to put on it, do not have humanity's best interests at heart. They clearly don't care about people, about regular humanity, but they do seem to reserve a special contempt for black people, it seems to me. From slavery to herding black people into the ghettos of American cities, and then flooding the ghettos with crack cocaine and AIDS, and the taking over of the hip-hop industry, and the fact that so many young black men are in jail, basically keeping the US jail system going, it seems to me that they have a particular contempt for people of color. And in my view, that's what, to a large extent, is driving what's been going on in the hip-hop game. So I'm sure we all know this guy, Jay-Z. Lots to say about him. Jay-Z, to me, is the classic example of how they recruit artists, rappers, into the industry, and then absolutely control every aspect of what they do. It's well documented that he grew up in the project, Marcy Project in Brooklyn, a very poor area. He was a drug dealer, came from absolute poverty, but clearly he had skills as a rapper. You know, he had talent. And that talent was recognized, and so he was recruited into the industry because it was seen that he could be of use within the agenda that they had planned to influence an entire generation of young people without them realizing what's going on, and to plant subliminal messages into their minds and to just shape and mold society and people's perceptions of life. And they've done a bloody good job of it. So the thing you see Jay-Z doing all the time, going back to the symbols, is this pyramid sign. And the cover story is that it's the rock sign, Rockefeller. His record label was called Rockefeller Records, Rock at Fella. And obviously it was named after the Rockefeller Illuminati bloodline family. There's David Rockefeller, the current head of that particular bloodline. He's a good looking fella, isn't he? They're really good looking, these Illuminati types, you know. Relax, ladies, they're married. So Jay-Z named his record label Rockefeller Records, and so the cover story that goes with it is it's supposed to be a diamond, a rock. And so when you go to a Jay-Z concert, he calls out the suggestion to his fans, throw up your rocks. And everyone, thinking they're making a diamond sign, celebrating the whole bling-bling culture of hip-hop, puts their hands in the diamond shape like that, and there they are, unknowingly, energetically empowering what that symbol represents, which is a depiction of the Illuminati pyramid that we saw earlier, the whole power structure that's running the show without these people even realizing what's being done to them. There he is again. Just put it into context. And the same symbol, interestingly, is seen here, being done by Anton Sandor LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan. So I bet most kids at Jay-Z concerts haven't heard of this guy, and I've never seen this. But there's an early depiction of that very same symbol.
What year is that from?
The LaVey one? I don't know exactly. I think it's probably the 1940s, something like that. So, going back to videos, you see the pyramid sign appearing in a lot of music videos, or particularly since about 2007-2008, which it tended to coincide with Obama coming into office, coincidentally, because a lot of changes took place in 2008. But really, the agenda has been ramped up big time in the last 5 years. This is a scene from Rihanna's Umbrella video from 2007. And where have we seen pyramids again lately? Oh, yeah. The Olympic Stadium, absolutely full of them. How bloody blatant can you get? I mean, who didn't spot this stuff when it was all over the media last year? Absolutely obvious, blatant representation of the same idea in the Olympic Stadium. At the US Super Bowl halftime show, which is watched by millions and millions of people in the US, it's an annual institution. The advertisers in that sequence pay ridiculous sums of money to get their ads seen because there's so many people giving their attention to the Super Bowl halftime show. Madonna did it last year, and it was like an A to Z of Illuminati, Masonic, occult imagery, you name it, it was in there. This year, it was a little more subtle, but we did get Beyonce, Mrs. Jay-Z, arranged marriage, by the way, doing the same pyramid thing. And the mainstream media actually picked up on this one. A lot of mainstream outlets commented on the fact that she was doing this sign. But of course they wrote it off innocently as her paying homage to her husband's record label, Jay-Z, just doing the rock sign to reference Jay-Z. They didn't think to go any further into what it really was. Beyonce is a Christian, she says. And isn't it interesting how the artists that claim to be Christians are actually the very worst offenders? Here she is. This was a couple of weeks later at the Grammys, and she's doing the 666 finger signs, or the 2 sixes, which we've seen in many other depictions in the music industry, but that's been identified as the depiction of the number 666, and there's Beyonce doing it openly. She noticed the camera panning round and felt the need to do that. And, God, going back to Rosemary's Baby, Beyonce and Jay-Z had their child last year, who they named Blue Ivy Carter. I'm not entirely sure what the name represents, but there's bound to be some kind of underlying meaning to it. So, don't go much on her chances in life, sadly. And that's just me taking the piss, basically.
That's what you tell us.
You never know. And here he is, Aleister Crowley. And Aleister Crowley, the 20th century's best-known Satanist, possibly the world's, the great beast. What has Aleister Crowley got to do with the music industry, you might ask? Very good question, but he is involved and has been for a very long time. If we go way back, we see... I'll just close in on that a bit. We see the sleeve to the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album. And the Beatles at the time said that they put all their heroes on the sleeve of this record. These are our heroes, they said. And if you look in the top corner there, you see a depiction of Aleister Crowley. So Aleister Crowley was a hero of the Beatles, the greatest known Satanist. What's going on? This was Aleister Crowley's house, B Boluskine House on the shores of Loch Ness in Scotland. And that is Jimmy Page of the group Led Zeppelin, who was obsessed with Aleister Crowley. And he bought his house and allegedly held numerous seances there. And Jimmy Page has said that when he was writing many of the famous Led Zeppelin songs, he was actually channeling the lyrics from the great beyond, from somewhere out there. He says the lyrics just came to him, not least the lyrics to Stairway to Heaven, the famous Led Zeppelin song, but many others as well. So Jimmy Page was absolutely into Aleister Crowley. Many other artists have said the same thing. Elton John, David Bowie, Mick Jagger, many others. There's an absolute fascination and has been with Crowley for a very long time. And in more recent times, we see Jay-Z with his Do What Thou Wilt sweatshirt, openly flaunting it. And of course, this was the famous phrase of Aleister Crowley, do what thou wilt, should be the whole of the law. Jay-Z is obviously renewing that ethos, which is tied in with Satanism. And going back to the Beatles again, interestingly, on the sleeve of Yellow Submarine, which I'm sure people just didn't notice at the time, you got McCartney doing one of the sixes again, and Lennon doing the old Il Cornuto hand sign, which we'll see some more of in a minute. And I mean, Lennon went on in the 70s to make, for me, some of the most profound, spiritual, meaningful, empowering music ever heard. The stuff he was putting out in the 70s, like Instant Karma and Mind Games and all these songs, only started making sense to me in the last 2 or 3 years when I go back and listen to the lyrics. So 40 years ago, this guy was making music which is absolutely for these times. And the stuff that he's talking about really resonate and makes sense now. But back when he was in the Beatles in the 60s, it would appear that the whole group was compromised in some way in terms of adhering to the industry's agenda. We have a young Michael Jackson doing the old 666, or one of them anyway. I mean, Michael Jackson, that's just a tragic story from beginning to end, really. And here's Bono, dear old Bono. Not too fussy about the company he keeps, is he? My job, my salary, my career, my yacht, my mansion. Yeah, he doesn't mind who he hangs out with, Bono. And there he is, letting us know who owns him, just in case we don't realise. And going back to the old hand sign, there's Village Idiot Bush doing it, when inbreeding goes wrong. There's Clinton, no great surprise. Barry. And just while we're on the subject of that sign, this is a bit of a freaky one. Anyone know who this is?
Sandy.
Yeah, this is the little Parker girl, Emily Parker, we're told, who is one of the children that was killed at the Sandy Hook shooting. And she's the little girl that appeared sat on Obama's lap, seemingly, the day after the shooting. And she was wearing the same dress in that picture as she was in the Parker family photo that was released to the press after the shooting. What she's doing with that hand sign raises lots of questions. Robbie Parker is auditioning for the West End at the moment, I hear. He's doing very well. And Gene Rosen too. He's had lots of practice. Horns, depiction of sort of diabolical horns. This is Azalea Banks, a rapper, allegedly, that's come through in the last couple of years. So, just going back to the videos. This is a very interesting video to get inside. This is, again, Rihanna's Umbrella, which we looked at a while earlier. 2007, big, massive number one hit in the UK, in the US, all over the world. Kids singing it, you know, very, very big record, very big video too. And there's a guy called Lennon Onner, who's an American researcher and speaker. And he's really gone into an analysis of this video. and I've interviewed him for my latest podcast just a couple of weeks ago. And he's identified this scene, which, by the way, is on screen for a split second. When you watch the video, blink and you miss it. It's absolute subliminal messaging. It's a split second straight into the subconscious mind, where it's lodged for later processing. The conscious mind isn't even aware that it's seen it. But what this is supposed to be is Rihanna bending down with her head tilted, putting her arms out, and that's supposed to be the shape that her body makes. As you can probably see, it is anatomically impossible to strike that pose. There's way too much space up in the shoulder area. It's an obviously digitally manipulated image. And Lennon Honor has identified this as a depiction of a demonic entity known as Rain Man. We have this strange entity called Rain Man that has been cropping up in R&B and hip-hop, so-called, records over the last few years. It's not the only depiction of Rain Man. But in the lyrics to the song, you have Jay-Z, there's a surprise, mentioning Rain Man. And in hip-hop culture, all the talk of raining, making it rain, is a reference to when you're in a club, a nightclub or a strip club, getting wads of money, throwing the money up in the air and letting all the notes rain down on the people, just showing off how rich you are. It's called making it rain. But there's been lots of references to rain and making it rain in lyrics, and that would appear to be the cover story for it. So later on in the video, we get Rihanna kind of morphing into this entity again, which has been identified as this Rain Man character. This is very dark stuff. You know, music videos didn't used to be like this when I was growing up. You never used to see this sort of stuff. Something's going on. So, just closing on that a bit. Okay. Well, this is a quote from Eminem in an interview a few years back, and he says, "My name isn't going to be Slim Shady no more, no more Eminem either. I don't even go by my government name, Marshall Mathers. If I do come back, you know what my new name going to be? Rain Man." What a coincidence. Then, quote from Jay-Z, "I look at music like a puzzle, like I try to figure out what I'm going to say on there, figure out the emotion on the track, what it's saying, then I go through my Rain Man. I can't explain it to you all. It just comes out of the air for me. You start mumbling." And most people are probably familiar with the movie Rain Man, which came out in 1988. Tom Cruise, Dustin Hoffman. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I've heard the suggestion that the movie was brought out because Hollywood works in conjunction with the music industry, because ultimately they're both controlled by the same powers if you go far enough up. It's the same individuals pulling the strings of all these different elements. The suggestion is that Rain Man was brought out as an excuse for the later introduction of this Rain Man entity into music, so that if anyone started asking questions about what's all this Rain Man business, oh, it's a reference to the movie, you know, it's throwing back to the movie from the 80s, a ready-made cover story. So I don't know if that's true or not, but something to consider. And keeping with videos, this is the most blatant bloody display of symbolism I've seen in a music video. Kesha, whatever you, however you pronounce it. This is a song called Die Young. Great sentiments. You've got the upside down cross. You got the satanic pentagram there, the all-seeing eye, the pyramid over the all-seeing eye, so they've got it all in there. Talk about bloody A to Z of symbolism. And this track came out last year, and the lyrics are basically along the lines of, hey, young people that are listening to this stuff, because it's primarily teenage girls, life is all about going out, getting wasted, partying, drinking as much as you can till you pass out, having unprotected promiscuous sex with anyone you like, because we're all going to die young anyway. The hook is, because we're all going to die young. And the record was pulled from radio station playlists immediately after the Sandy Hook shooting, or not, in some ridiculous feigned morality, as if, you know, it's okay for the powers that be to be doing all the messed up stuff that they're doing, but suddenly they develop some morals when there's a song out called Die Young after some kids have apparently been shot. So it's obviously all bullshit. But this is the sort of stuff that's going into videos, and it's aimed at primarily teenage girls, very young teenage girls, 13, 14, 15, and this is what they're absorbing these days. Another Jay-Z video, lovely one.
A small one,
cheers. This is On to the Next One, Jay-Z record. Yeah, all kinds of stuff going on there, all quite dark. And I've been interested for some time in how video directors would justify these things, because, you know, somewhere the decision rests with somebody as to what goes in these videos. And, you know, I've thought for a long time I would love to hear the justification for what all these images are. We've got an attempt at a justification here from this guy, Sam Brown, the director of the video we just saw. And he's kind of writing it off as, I think when you're dealing abstract imagery, people are going to want to draw lines between things and make sense of it. There's imagery in this video that's drawn from all over the place. You could connect anything if you try hard enough and make it mean anything you want it to. So he's not really going into why he's chosen those specific images. He's kind of writing it off as you see what you want to see kind of thing. But it's the only justification for images in videos that I've heard anyone make, actually. I did reach out to a video of a director of one of these videos asking for the meaning behind the imagery, but didn't get a reply, surprisingly. Lil Wayne. Where do you start with Lil Wayne? Oh. Now, Lil Wayne is apparently one of the biggest rappers out there at the moment. Although what passes for hip-hop these days, let me tell you, is not hip-hop. It bears absolutely no relation to what went before it. Same with so-called R&B. It's all been hijacked, it's all been infiltrated, and it's the conditioning of an entire generation. Because if you're 13, 14 years of age and you're just starting to get interested in music, these are the artists you're being presented with. You haven't got any kind of heritage or history or anything to compare it to. And so you just accept what you're given and you think, well, this is the way music sounds. This is how artists carry on. This is what life is all about. And that's what they're doing because, you know, people of my kind of age and generation are falling out of the game. You know, we're not going clubbing anymore and we're not really a part of things. But you've got a new generation coming up who are getting exposed to all this stuff. And they're getting ever younger as well. If you listen to Radio 1 or One Extra's explanation of who their target audience is, a few years ago, Radio 1's target audience was stated as, I think, 18 to 25-year-olds, that kind of broad age range. And in recent years, they've been bringing it down and down and down. You know, the stated target audience was then 17-year-olds, then 16-year-olds. Now, Radio 1 and One Extra is primarily aimed at 14 and 15-year-olds. And One Extra is all about so-called urban music, which is so-called hip-hop and grime and garage and all the rest of it. But, you know, importantly, this type of music. Lil Wayne emerged a few years ago. He's been in the news a lot lately. He had a seizure last week, and it was his third seizure. He apparently went down on a video shoot last week, had a seizure during a video shoot. He's had two other seizures on flights in recent times. He's been in and out of jail. The guy's life is a mess. He's like a walking car crash. And just going back to mind control, MKUltra mind control, there's a very strong indication that he's undergone mind control because he acts like he doesn't know what planet he's on most of the time. So I would suspect that because he's one of the most important artists in the game and he's got such high exposure, I would suggest that he's very much part of that agenda. This is from a video for the song Love Me, which came out just a few weeks ago. You'll notice that we've got a monarch butterfly cropping up again on the girl. And there's Wayne dressed up as some sort of demonic entity. I think we got the lyric here. Yeah, here we go. This is the lyric that that image refers to, or the end of it at least. "These hoes love me like Satan, man," he says. I don't know why the hoes loved Satan in the first place, but it's assumed that they did. And at the point where he says, "These hoes love me like Satan, man," we get that split-second image coming up on the screen, similar to the Rihanna one. Again, blink and you miss it, straight into the subconscious mind. Wayne dressed up as presumably Satan. And then we've got these other lovely lyrics. The hook is, "Long as my bitches love me, can't give a fuck about no nigga, as long as his bitches love me." That's what 14 and 15-year-olds are getting these days. Obviously, this doesn't go on the radio. These lyrics are not heard on the radio, but the radio edits are a joke. So instead of the word fuck on the radio these days, you have frrrr. I don't give a frrrr. So, kids are supposed to not know what that was and not be offended by it. It's all a joke. We get into the realms of predictive programming, which has been a very common technique in Hollywood movies over the years. The classic example is the huge number of films prior to 9/11 in 2001 that seemed to foreshadow what was going to come. There are numerous videos on YouTube about it, and they break down all these scenes in various movies that make reference to what was to come on 9/11. There's one example there. We have...
Do you know what movie that is from, by the way?
I don't remember that one, sorry. I don't know which one that was. This is The Matrix, though. And you see Neo's identity card gives the date 11th of September 2001. And The Matrix came out in 1999. So, isn't that interesting? More recently, we've seen a reference to Sandy Hook in the Batman Dark Knight movie. I've not seen that movie, actually, but I've seen the analysis of it where Sandy Hook appears on a map. And why would it be there? Another coincidence. And back to the music. Here's a sleeve for Michael Jackson's Blood on the Dance Floor album. This was released in 1997, and it looks to me very much as if the city skyline in the background there is Manhattan. Looks very similar to Manhattan to me, and you see it crumbling into dust in apparent impending destruction there. And interestingly, he's dancing around on a Masonic checkered floor there as well. So there was stuff going on in the 90s. They've stepped up the game big time in the noughties, but looking back now, you can see a lot of this stuff was going on in the 90s. And just the last one on predictive programming there, this is an Amazon entry for Jay-Z's Blueprint album. And if you look right at the top here, you can see the release date of Jay-Z's Blueprint album just happens to be September 11th, 2001. What a coincidence. Back to Lil Wayne. This is a classic one. This was from last year. This is the song My Home Is Still. And this one has the hook line, "Go stupid, go stupid, go stupid, go stupid," which you will if you listen to that music for too long. Mm-hmm. Sorry, not music. Shite. Here's Lil Wayne in the video to that song. And there's a scene where he's in a movie theater surrounded by 12 skeletons. And this video was released a few days before the Aurora, Colorado shooting, in which 12 people, we're told, died in a movie theater. What a coincidence. And there's Jay-Z with his best mate, Kanye West. And they're doing the old pyramid hand sign and having a right old laugh because it's all a good bit of fun. Now, Kanye West is, to me, the greatest example of a compromised artist, an artist gone bad. He started off as a producer, a hip-hop producer, working with Jay-Z and many others, and he came out as an artist in his own right in about 2003, because he said that he wanted to be a rapper as well as a producer, and it turned out he was very skilled at that. And so he brought out an album in 2003, which is regarded as a bit of a modern classic, The College Dropout. Very conscious hip-hop, you know, real followers of the genre love that album because he's talking about some real meaningful things. He's got some real messages in the music. Here's a lyric from a track, All Falls Down. It seems we live in the American dream, but the people highest up got the lowest self-esteem. The prettiest people do the ugliest things for the road to riches and diamond rings. Then we fast forward to 2012, Niggas in Paris. And there's the sort of stuff he's talking about these days. What's Gucci my nigga? What's Louis my killer? What's drugs my dealer? What's that jacket my jailer? And you know the rest. And he's gone from a rap style, which you know is represented in those first lyrics there, to talking about this sort of stuff. And his trademark now is just to go, he'll say a line and just go, And so, you know, kids in clubs mimicking it, just going, So, you know, it's the dumbing down of a whole goddamn generation. And Kanye, it's possible with a lot of these artists to pinpoint the exact point in their career where they got recruited and moved up and stepped up in the game. And to my thinking, that happened with Kanye West in 2005 when he appeared on a US telethon with Mike Myers, the Austin Powers actor, and it was in the wake of Hurricane Katrina. And Kanye, unscripted, happened to say on live TV, George Bush doesn't care about black people. And he was absolutely right. I'd remove the word black, but he was absolutely right. And obviously this didn't go down too well with the powers that be, for obvious reasons. And from that point on, I noticed Kanye's music started to change. And we had all this business going on. You know, he started working closer with Jay-Z, and his lyrics started to get more materialistic. Gucci this, Armani that, all the usual stuff, champagne and girls in the club, and, you know, other stuff we've heard about for the last 16, 17 years non-stop. And it's interesting that references to the Illuminati have really started to get into the mainstream in recent times. And here's a tweet from Kanye West from 2010. I've got a question about the Illuminati. What is it exactly? And why do people think pop stars have a membership? LOL. 2 years later, he pops up on a remix of a Rihanna song, and he says the lyrics, Illuminati, high society, we in this party and nobody invited me. So I guess he answered his own question. But these artists are having to start defending themselves now because there is a recognition of this phrase, the Illuminati, even though I would suggest most people don't entirely understand what it represents. People have heard references to the Illuminati, and they've heard these artists being linked to it, and so these artists are having to start defending themselves. Jay-Z famously was asked in an interview, are you part of the Illuminati? And he had to kind of defend himself, and he did it in a very clumsy, unconvincing way. Of course, they're not part of the Illuminati. You know, in their wildest dreams, they're puppets and stooges of the Illuminati, used to advance an agenda. And when the system decides they don't need a particular artist anymore, they're gone. Michael Jackson being a good example. A Kanye West video from a couple of years ago called Power, A to Z of occult imagery again. Use your own imagination as to what's going on there, but it doesn't look fun to me. It doesn't look like music used to be. And here's Kanye with a Baphomet t-shirt, the latest fashion accessory in the industry. There's Beyonce with a Baphomet ring. Can't see it very well there, but in the close-up, it's a ring depicting Baphomet. There she is as Sasha Fierce, her alter ego, mind control alter ego, probably, flaunting in a Baphomet dress. We'll come back to Baphomet shortly. Lady Gaga again. Lady Gaga, another absolute example of a manufactured artist from start to finish. The clue is in the name, Gaga. I doubt she knows what bloody day it is, what planet she's on. I remember before Lady Gaga broke through, this guy was saying to me, oh, watch out for this artist called Lady Gaga. She's going to be the next big thing. And I thought, well, how do you know she's going to be the next big thing? Because if the decision as to which artist people are going to listen to and which music people are going to buy rests with the consumer, nobody would be able to predict who's going to be the next big thing, because it would be down to the individual music buyers to make them the next big thing. So that statement alone was just an indication of the fact that the industry decides who its key players are going to be, and it elevates them to the top, and if you're not chosen and you're not part of the agenda, you're never going to see that success. And there's a heavy price to pay for it as well. Lady Gaga with some nice Saturn imagery going on in that particular video. Yeah, I've just put this lyric in here by Lupe Fiasco, who to me is a great exception in the world of hip-hop. He's the only artist that I can identify right now that has somehow managed to slip through the net and is able to put out music that has something meaningful to say. He's on a major record label, so I don't know if the directors are just not paying attention or if there's something else going on, but he does seem to be able to get messages out there that make sense. This was a couple of years ago. I really think the war on terror is a bunch of bullshit, just a poor excuse for you to use up all your bullets. Gaza Strip was getting bombed, Obama didn't say shit. I mean, where do you hear that in a record these days? So big respect to Lupe Fiasco. Yeah, and here's the contrast, another one from Lil Wayne, My Home Is Still. I mean, you can read what it says, but don't make my goons go stupid, go stupid, go stupid, go stupid. I've got to put that patch over my third eye. That's an interesting one. Most kids hearing this stuff would have no idea what it's talking about, and they would think this is hip-hop, this is the way it goes down these days. And if all you do is listen to this music and nothing else, your whole perception on what life is all about and what matters is getting wasted, partying, having unprotected sex with whoever you want, buying brands, buying the latest iPad, buying an Armani suit, drinking champagne. You know, that's what life is all about, sadly, to young people that are getting exposed to this stuff. It's not what went before. Nicki Minaj. Kiss my arse and my anus because it's finally famous. Little girls are singing that. Yeah, this is a very interesting reference. People might have heard of this before, but there was this meeting in March 1969. And I was interested to see that it's the 20th of March 1969, so 24 years and one day ago. It's almost the exact day. And it was Planned Parenthood, which was a faction of the Rockefeller Foundation. And this was an event that happened in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And there was the national medical director of that group, Dr. Richard Day. And he gave a presentation to a group of insiders. And he was talking about all the changes that were due to happen in society over the coming decades. And there was an insider that kind of leaked this information, and so it got out into the mainstream. And pretty much everything that he talked about that was planned to control, mind control, and shape society and the way people live and the way people think has come to pass. And one of the references was pornography, violence, and obscenity on TV and in movies will be increased. People will be desensitized to violence and porn and made to feel life is short, precarious, and brutish. Music will get worse and will be used for indoctrination. That was said in 1969. They plan a long time ahead. Back to the monarch butterfly then, and we're back to the realms of mind control, just looking at some of the mind control symbolism that has appeared in music recently. This is Brandy, R&B singer Brandy, with a butterfly tattoo. Most of the artists we're talking about here are American artists, but occasionally you get a British artist who seems to show all the same signs of being controlled as the American ones do, and this is Jessie J, British singer with a pair of Mickey Mouse ears. People probably know all about Disney and the true nature of the Disney Corporation. And Mickey Mouse ears are a very sick and twisted depiction of mind control of a mind controlled subject. And we see it cropping up time and time again. Here's Azalea Banks with a Mickey Mouse t-shirt. Various other ways of depicting mind control subjects. This is the sex kitten beta programming kind of imagery. Marilyn Monroe was the classic icon of that particular facet of mind control. And this is Katy Perry showing the same kind of thing. There was an interview with Katy Perry, actually, a few years ago, where she said, very tellingly, that she wanted to become a singer in the gospel field. And she says to the interviewer that she didn't make it, and she was unable to make a success in that genre. So I sold my soul to the devil, she said, her words. Bob Dylan has actually said a similar thing. Bob Dylan was interviewed recently, and the interviewer said, how have you managed to maintain such a long career? And Dylan says, I made a deal with the devil a long time ago, or words to that effect. And he looked as if he had some regrets about it as well. He looked as if he wished he'd never done it, because once you're in, there's no way out. Well, there is, but it's the Michael Jackson way. So another monarch butterfly, there's Wayne again. On a good day. Nicki Minaj. Another classic depiction of mind control is the doll, and particularly the Barbie doll with pink hair. Barbie doll imagery is used to symbolise MKUltra mind control. Again, it's very sick, it's very twisted, it's supposed to be something very innocent, but that's what they like to do. They like to invert things, and you know, we're dealing with some very mentally ill, diseased characters here. And so Nicki Minaj has been created as the number one female rapper, and her nickname is Barbie. They even call her Barbie. And her female fans, the followers, are called Barbs. So she'll say, shout out to all my Barbs. And teenage girls that are into Nicki Minaj are encouraged to call themselves Barbs and go along with this whole Barbie doll imagery. This is Nicki Minaj when she's being herself. Onika Maraj, that's what she looks like. And that's what they've done to her. Yeah, the alter ego of Beyoncé, Sasha Fierce. A few years ago, Beyoncé announced that she got this new character called Sasha Fierce. And when she went on stage, she was no longer Beyoncé, in particular stage shows, she became Sasha Fierce. And it's a classic reference to dissociative identities as a result of mind control, that of course people don't realise. And in interviews, she says, oh, Sasha Fierce does all the things that I, as Beyoncé, can't. She's daring and she's bold, and I get on stage and I'm somebody else. She's telling you what's going on, but people don't realise what she really means. There was a classic picture which went around the internet of her Super Bowl performance a few weeks ago. Beyoncé's management tried to get these pictures removed from the internet. And they were basically saying, because they're unflattering, you know, she doesn't look good. But it looks to me like she's starting to bloody morph, shapeshift into something else. You know, there's something going on there. She's clearly clicked into Sasha Fierce mode. And that no longer looks like Beyoncé. A magazine article, a woman possessed. It's all in the words. Britney Spears with the Mickey Mouse ears. There was an interesting case a few weeks ago of a former manager of Britney Spears, one Sam Lutfi, who was apparently entering into a legal case with Britney Spears' family over an alleged breach of contract. And there were all sorts of things that were due to be brought up in the court case. And the judge overseeing it said something very strange. The probate judge overseeing the conservatorship said that the pop princess should not testify, as it could potentially cause her irreparable harm and immediate danger. Britney Spears is quite clearly a mind control subject. There's a classic video on YouTube, if anyone's ever seen it, where she's being interviewed and she just flips. She goes into one of these alternative identities and she just disappears for a few seconds and then she kind of comes back. If you look up Britney Spears mind control in YouTube, you can see the clip. And it's absolute proof, as far as I'm concerned, that they've messed around with her mind. And so she was not supposed to be at this trial because, I don't know, maybe it could cause her to remember things that they don't want her to remember. Of course, the classic thing a few years ago was Britney Spears shaving her head and going berserk and hitting a car with an umbrella and being into all kinds of irrational, crazy behaviour. And we've seen an example of that in the last couple of weeks with Justin Bieber. That's Justin Bieber. He was performing in the UK, I think it was last week or the week before, and there were all kinds of headlines in the mainstream press about him being 2 hours late for one of his shows. He apparently developed breathing difficulties during one show and had to go off stage for 20 minutes. And then he's going around London wearing a gas mask and writing all kinds of strange stuff on Twitter. You know, I don't have to explain myself to anyone. Just basically sounding like he's flipped and he's going out of his mind. It's very reminiscent of the Britney Spears incident. And it would appear that Justin Bieber is just the latest in a long line of those that they choose. The only reason I put this here is because if you look here, there's some very strange scarring going on a Obama's head, which has never been explained. He appeared in public, I think this was last year, and he's got these scars around the back of his head, and nobody's explained what they are. So just something to ponder. That's Mariah Carey's pregnant belly with a monarch butterfly drawn on it. Why would you? Mariah Carey went off the rails a few years ago. Suicide attempts. Then it was announced, oh, Mariah's okay now, she's back. Reprogrammed. We go back to the 80s. Madonna. This is, there's Madonna yesterday. That's how she looks now. And here she is in 1985, desperately seeking Susan. Who noticed this at the time? Illuminati pyramid with the capstone removed and an eye. Who saw that in 1985? But she's been in it from the start. That's her Super Bowl performance from last year. Pick an image. It will be in there. Baphomet. We saw some depictions of Baphomet earlier with Kanye's t-shirt and all the rest of it. You know, this demonic entity from the mid-1800s that's supposed to be a representation of the devil. Baphomet imagery is cropping up everywhere. Nicki Minaj video. This one is called Out of My Mind. They don't even hide it anymore. Nicki Minaj, Out of My Mind. She's in a straitjacket, in a cell. All kinds of scribblings in the background. There's a UFO there. There's the all-seeing eye. They live. All kinds of stuff scrawled on the wall. Pink hair. You know, very dark stuff. Right in your face, all over MTV. Kids seeing it. It's a mess. Will.i.am. Will.die.am. His name reads like a friggin' email address or website address. Frontman of the Black Eyed Peas. Their music is known, or it has been in recent years, for employing auto-tune. And auto-tune is this disgusting, bloody horrible robotic kind of voice program that they plug vocals into, so it makes them sound like a frigging cyborg. And it's actually all part of another aspect of the agenda, which is promoting transhumanism, the merging of humanity with technology. It's long been a dream of the individuals that are controlling things to have a population that is absolutely dependent on technology. You know, microchips and plugged into a giant computer and all the rest of it. And they're starting to make the whole idea fashionable and sexy and appealing by introducing it into music. And you've had this awful program called Auto-Tune that's been running in popular records for the last 5 or 6 years. Everyone hates it, it sounds shit, but it's all over everyone's records. And Will.i.am is always dressed up as a cyborg, he's always pushing the whole robot agenda, just another sad stooge. Playing his role, doing what he's told, because he has to. Justin Timberlake's latest album, which came out this week, Man and Machine. There it is again. Just getting into the realms of recording frequencies as well, which is something I discovered quite recently. For many decades now, the standard tuning frequency for musicians, for instruments, and for all recorded music has been 440 hertz. Prior to that, it was 432. The 440 hertz frequency, apparently there was an attempt to introduce it by the Rockefeller Foundation, surprise, in about 1917. But it was actually brought in after the Second World War, and apparently it was established by Joseph Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister, when it was discovered that music, military music, played at the 440 hertz frequency, caused the soldiers to act in a very kind of military, very ordered fashion, a very kind of mechanical fashion. And I've heard various speakers, there's a guy called Len Horowitz, great American speaker that goes into all this, and he said that of all the frequencies that music could be listened to at, 440 is about the most dissonant and disturbing and non-harmonic to the human body and the human mind as you can get. Any other frequency would have been better, but it's deliberately been placed into recordings. And he says that the frequency of the universe, the love frequency, the most harmonic frequency you can get is 528, but you never hear music at 528. Just very quickly, we've heard about the Rockefellers. There's another bloodline dynasty beginning with R that we're not supposed to talk about, so we will. The Rothschilds. And of course the Rothschilds have a finger in many pies, so why would they not be associated with the music business? This is a rapper by the name of Jay Electronica, who was signed by Jay-Z a few years ago. And recently, he entered into an apparently romantic relationship with Kate Rothschild, an heiress to the Rothschild banking dynasty. And nobody quite knows what to make of it, because she was previously in a relationship with this guy, Ben Goldsmith, son of Sir James Goldsmith, financier. And then, all of a sudden, there were these Twitter tweets going back and forth between Jay Electronica and Ben Goldsmith, and they're arguing over Kate, and before you know it, Jay Electronica is in a relationship with Kate Rothschild. And some people have commented that what he's doing is he's infiltrating a kind of Illuminati foundation, stronghold, and he's kind of working from within to break down the system, some people say. But others are of the view that this is a genuine thing, or that he's been placed with Kate Rothschild as an arranged kind of relationship because he's just as controlled as anyone else. So I don't know what the truth is there, but there the Rothschilds are having some sort of association with the music biz. Not the first time it's happened either. This was a Rothschild woman, her nickname was Nika, and she was linked to Thelonious Monk, the jazz musician, in the 1950s. They had a romantic relationship as well. There's Thelonious Monk on one of his album sleeves with multiple depictions of him. Could be a reference to Mind Control, or maybe not. More recently, Rick Ross, big rapper apparently, appeared on a mixtape album called The Black Bar Mitzvah inside this ancient occultic symbol, which of course is recognised as the Star of David on the flag of Israel these days, but actually was the symbol of the Rothschilds when they renamed themselves from Bauer to Rothschild back in Frankfurt in 1776. And there's Rick Ross flaunting with this this symbol. So another sly reference to the Rothschilds. And here's Hip Hop Heaven, all the many hip hop and R&B artists that just happened to have died over the years. Some of them have been quite strange circumstances. Aaliyah died in a plane crash. Lisa Left Eye Lopez in a car crash. Tupac and Biggie were shot. Many other, Jam Master Jay was shot. We have Bob Marley up there, who developed a kind of cancerous toe after an incident putting on a football boot, donated to him by the governor of Jamaica, we hear. But there seems to be a disproportionate number of hip-hop and R&B artists that just happen to have died over the years. There's a theory, going back to Professor Griff of Public Enemy, that there's a program of ritual sacrifice that is actually going on in the music industry, that because these individuals are so obsessed with the occult and rituals, what they're actually doing is bumping off certain artists when an occasion arises. There's some very strange, I haven't got time to go into it now, but some very strange anomalies with Michael Jackson's death. Probably even stranger with Whitney Houston. If you look at the circumstances surrounding how Whitney Houston died. Very, very strange. More questions than answers. And that's the case with a lot of artists. So, and this is crop circle relevant. So far, everything that I've talked about has been linked to sort of R&B and hip-hop and pop music field. But the biggest form of music in the world right now in terms of what young people listen to is electronic dance music or house music. And I've not noticed anything up until recently that indicates that that particular genre has been taken over in the same way. But we had this album come out recently by Paul Van Dyke. I'm not entirely sure what it's supposed to depict. Some people have said that it says initials, PVD. But it's just an interesting one, and I've noticed a few symbols starting to creep into electronic dance music now as well. And why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they use that one as well? So, wrapping up then, I do want to end on a positive note, because I don't think there's any point in exposing all this stuff and then just leaving it at that, because the impression you walk away with is that we're all doomed. And we might as well just roll over and die, give in. And I don't believe that's the case at all. I'm very positive about how things are going to turn out. And I think getting information like this out is the first step in at least making people aware of what's going on, so that they then have the opportunity to make a choice as to whether they want to connect with it and give it their focus and their attention and their energy, or just to avoid it. And until this stuff is pointed out to people, most people aren't going to be aware of what's going on. And so at least then you have the power to make that choice. But I've got two young daughters, aged 2 and 4. I'm going to make it the rest of my career's work to keep them away from Lady Gaga, Keisha and Nicki Minaj. And I like to think that by the time they become teenagers and start going clubbing and listening to music, things will have been sorted out a bit. And so really, if you want to do something about this, don't connect with this music, just don't empower it in any way. There is great music out there still being made. Of course, you don't hear it on the radio, you don't see it on MTV, but I've got a series of podcasts at the moment which focus on positive, meaningful music by switched-on artists. There's a lot of artists out there that understand what's going on. There's a lot of artists that get it, and they're putting it into their music. And if you dig deep enough and know where to find it, it's out there. And that's the sort of music that I'm pushing. And they're getting so blatant with this stuff now that there's got to come a tipping point where people just notice these bloody upside-down crosses and pentagrams everywhere. And, you know, how much longer can the one eye thing go on? So, you know, I am hopeful that things are going to get better. You have to be. Otherwise, there's no point in exposing it. So, you know, that's my hope. And that's about it, really.
Thank you very much.
A
little bit of time for questions. Question there.
Have you heard anything about the 27 Club? You know, artists at 27 getting killed in 3 on the same day, or died on the same day?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The 27 Club is well known in music. Many artists have died at the age of 27, going way back.
Yeah.
I think Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison. Who else from back in the day? More recently, Kurt Cobain,
yeah.
Amy Winehouse, and there's a whole bunch of artists in the sort of R&B and hip-hop field as well. And I think there's absolute validity to that. There seems to be some interest in getting rid of artists at the age of 27,
yeah.
Some symbolic relevance to it. Could well be, yeah, 2 and 7, 9, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's all numerology,
yeah.
Which they're obsessed with.
That little girl on Obama's lap, showing the sign. We'll just explain what her connection was to Sandy Hook.
Well, we're told that she's one of the children that was shot in the school, killed.
And then later she appears on Obama's lap.
Yes. I think it was the day after the alleged shooting. Obama is pictured with some survivors, but she is sat on his lap, and we've already been told by the mainstream media that she's one of the children that died.
Okay.
She's the daughter, apparently, of Robbie Parker, the famous actor, who people might have seen. He's the guy who is apparently the parent of one of, you know, his daughter's just been killed. And there's a famous video of him on YouTube preparing for his press conference, and he's laughing and joking. He's like,
yeah. And he comes up to the lectern,
and he starts hyperventilating and sort of getting into mode. So he's going, and then, my name's Robbie Parker. And then he puts on this whole act of being a bereaved parent. So, very strange business.
And then later his daughter appears with Obama.
Yeah, she's pictured on Obama's lap wearing the same dress as she appears in a family photo, a Parker family photo, which had been released to the press. So the suspicion is what they've actually done is taken a photo of her with her actor parents and then wheeled her out and stuck her on Obama's lap and not worried about the continuity of it.
Being interviewed by David Icke, he did 8 hours of Credo talking, and I never knew what the actual eye was in these images, in this Illuminati eye, but I know it sounds really bizarre, but Credo was saying that in the past when the reptilian, which the Africans call Chitauris, interfered with humanity, they were consciously known to, they were consciously functioning on the planet. Everyone, you know, humans knew them, and they had a third eye which could kill, and it's the, that is the eye that's being shown to us repeatedly. It's almost as if it's in our subconscious. We're being told in no uncertain terms to be very frightened at a very deep subconscious level by the showing of this evil eye, and that's what Credo Mutua says the eye is. It's the eye of the third evil eye of the reptiles that could kill with that eye.
Yeah, well, we've got the lyric in the Lil Wayne record that I showed earlier where he says, I've got to put a patch over my third eye. So whoever wrote that lyric,
yeah,
wouldn't have been him, knew what they were saying.
Do we have any other last questions?
Can you take us through your theories on Michael Jackson? Because I'm fascinated by those.
More questions than answers with Michael Jackson. But he did... in the 90s, at a press conference, say Sony is an evil corporation. Those were actually his words, Sony is evil. And he branded Tommy Mottola, who was the chief executive of the Sony Corporation, also one-time husband of Mariah Carey, and many suspect he was her mind control handler. He branded him as a devil. And so it seemed that his fate was sealed when he publicly branded Sony as evil and Mottola as a devil. And in terms of the circumstances surrounding his death, there's the strange business of the 25th, just going back to the 27 Club. A lot of artists just happen to have died on the 25th of the month, not always the same month, but the 25th pops up time and time again. Michael Jackson died on the 25th. There seems to be some ritual, numerical significance to that. Other than that, I mean, Conrad Murray just strikes me as the classic scapegoat, the classic fool guy. Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, that they always put it down to one individual who's in the frame for it, and as far as the mainstream media goes, end of story.
Because I heard rumours that he was about to sort of blow the lid on the Illuminati on the big concert tour he was planning, and if you look at some of these lyrics, like, I just want to tell you they don't really care about us, and repeating that mantra. So clearly he was trying to get a message across without being too blatant, and then they didn't like it.
I've heard the same. I've heard that he was about to, at these London shows, lift the lid on the industry and you know, reveal some stuff that they would prefer not to be revealed. And also that song, yeah, They Don't Really Care About Us, takes on new significance when you listen to it now. It almost comes as like a warning.
And just, you know, just to support what you're saying, brilliant work, by the way. I've got to compliment you on what you did. What obviously is a dead giveaway is no artist in history, after his death, shut down all the major TV news networks to broadcast 3 hours of his memorial. So the moment that happens, you know, something strange must have happened. So, you know, it's the...
Yeah, it's the old energy flows where attention goes idea. They did make a big deal of that. And the same thing with Whitney Houston. All kinds of strange things about Whitney Houston. Her daughter was discovered in the same bathtub as her the night before, in the same room, unconscious, drugged. almost as if it was a practice run for what was to come, or that she was supposed to be the sacrifice and it ended up being Whitney. But, you know, her mother died in that very bathtub the next night, while a party, a Grammys party, hosted by Clive Davis of Arista, big Illuminati insider, was going on downstairs in the hotel. They knew she was dead, and they're holding a party downstairs.
Wasn't it also a case of the drugs found with Michael Jackson with the same, came from the same chemist or whatever as the drugs found when you used in his apartment?
Probably, yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
I think I read that one somewhere.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Maybe curious to know that Jimmy Page used to own a few different pads around here. Had one at Plumpton, Turner's Hill, and indeed, if you want a good conspiracy theory, his kids used to go to our respective kids' school. And I once heard a cream tea with Jimmy Page. I'm afraid to tell you. But there we are. So, but yes, he definitely did have a lot of interest in stuff like that. And I think, especially when he lived at Plumpton, there were all sorts of tales and all sorts of weird goings on there. So, yes. He clearly had a root, and that was obviously several generations of musicians back. Now we're seeing it much more kind of like commercial, much more commercialised.
I should mention there's a great blog site. If you want to go way back to the days of the Rolling Stones, Beatles, Led Zeppelin, 60s and 70s, there's a blog site called Conspiro Media on WordPress. If you just look for Conspiro Media in Google, if you want to read up about the 60s and 70s and all these artists from way back, Rolling Stones and all the rest of them, that's a good site for that.
Last one.
Can you tell us a bit more about the conscious awakening that you had and then how everything fitted together?
Yeah. It was as a result of reading lots of books. I've always read alternative sort of stuff, and I've always felt as if I never felt like things were quite right about the world. Something always seemed to be missing. But I never really thought that much about it up until 2008. And I'd always read kind of interesting books. Graham Hancock's Fingerprints of the Gods changed my life in 1995. And then I got into Icke's stuff. It was that, really. It was reading David Icke's books and then discovering that other authors backed up everything that he was saying. And, yeah, everything just started to make sense. I'd had a lot of questions about life before that and why certain things were happening and why certain things were being done. And then when I woke up, so to speak, my new understanding answered all those questions. And so for me, it resonated and it was genuine, and I've gone with it.
Listen, we've got to finish there. Before I thank Mark properly, presuming you're not rushing off, hopefully not, as you're staying with us, and we're not, so you're not. If you want to chat a little bit more with Mark, we'll be going over to the Potters for a drink in a few minutes, so come over and join us. If you never come over, yeah, we could all do with a bite now. So, come and join us. We will be back here on May the 23rd for Christian Kiriakou. If you're not on a mailing list, write it down at the back, that would be lovely. If you're sitting on an orange chair when you get out, if you could just stack the orange chairs up and put them to the side, that'd be great. Don't scrape their new carpet or we'll be in trouble. But thank you all for coming, and mostly thank you to Mark. Big round of applause for Mark Evans.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.